It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. You have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. The show is brought to you by Alabama Pipe and Supply, UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed.
Yeah.
Man, I tell you what, I went over there over the weekend and eat some fine food over there. And he's talking about those salmon patties. I know I didn't say that right. But I can't even say idea right. Don't ask me to say Massachusetts.
It didn't matter how you said it, but they brought you the right stuff.
They brought me the right food anyway.
That's good. That's all it really
matters. Yeah, let's go. Nick can call us in here in a little while. We'll give us an update on some of that. They had that big bras across the causeway deal. I've never seen so many bras hanging on strings down the side of the causeway. I'm going over there over the weekend. I'm going like, man, what is this deal there? Where's all these women at?
Yeah. I don't know if I need to comment on that one or not.
No, we'll leave that one alone.
I probably need to leave that one alone. I tell you what, we've actually had a little bit of not cool weather, but cooler weather.
Ooh, it felt good, though.
It's been feeling good here. I'm sure we're getting in that time of year that we're going to get a little more of that. I know everybody is thinking about getting their car ready for winter. You know, it's time to go ahead and do it now. Don't wait till the last minute.
Right.
You know? We've already seen some cars come in with low tire lights on because, you know, cooler weather, temperature drops.
You might need to explain that. You know, yeah. Why, when it gets cold, would that tire light come on?
Well, and that's the thing is the, for every 10 degrees of temperature drop is 1 pound of pressure in your tire, and, you know, give or take just a little bit there. But, so if you drop down, if that tire pressure was set properly and it was 80 or 90 degrees outside and we've got a 40 degree day, you know, it could be 5 pounds off.
Oh my goodness!
So yeah, that's why you may get up.
That would be in other words, the tire wouldn't be flat.
Right.
What you're saying is, but the tire light would come on, which is a warning.
Right.
Now after you drive it for a while, and the tires get warm, would that go away?
Yeah.
Or do you need to reset the tire pressure?
You really need to reset it because the cool weather is not going to go away, so
I mean,
you'd be better off if you go ahead and reset your pressures now. If it goes up a couple of pounds, not a big deal. That's better for it than if you're low on air.
So the wear factor of running the tire with 4, 5, 6 pounds of low air pressure would be great enough to warrant paying real close attention to that.
Well, I mean, it's not only the wear factor, but it's also the handling characteristics of the car and everything else involved. So,
are they that? Is the handling characteristics that close?
Well, I mean, it changes the way the car drives, and if for some reason you get in a panic stop or have to make an aggressive turn to avoid something, you know, having that tire properly inflated makes all the difference in the world in the way the car reacts.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. So some of these high-dollar cars with the expensive thin or low walls, low sidewalls, you could actually hit a little dip in the road and you might curb a rim
for bending the wheel because there's no cushion there, because the tire sidewalls are short. But it just compounds that one.
Well, those rims are only about $12-15, aren't they?
Yeah, they don't cost much, so it ain't a big deal. Yeah.
So what do they cost? Yeah, I know that was.
I mean,
facetious.
Some of those things. Yeah, I mean, they can be a grand a piece, easy. So I mean, it's it makes sense to be careful with that. Plus, you can damage the tire pretty easily. Run it low. You're not going to hurt it near as much if you run it a couple pounds high versus running it low. And if you get up in the morning, your low tire light's on, you run down the road 10 miles and the light goes off, it's probably just a pound or two low, or below that low limit. So probably just need to bump the pressure up just a little bit, get it checked. Okay. Yeah. So
let's say the tire pressure should be 34 pounds. What would you set it at? And when it's real cold like that, would you set it 2 pounds above 34? I mean, like 36?
Well, you know, if I'm doing, you know, it depends on the temperature of the tire, you know.
Okay.
So if basically you get up and you're supposed to, you know, the air pressure they give you in the door is a cold tire pressure. So
cold tire pressure.
Right.
Not after you've driven it for 30, 45 minutes and go to a tire store.
Right. Right. So if you get in and you drive it, you know, a mile or two down the road to a gas station, tire store, whatever. I mean, I say gas station like they actually have air pumps anymore.
Like we really, you know, have like somebody, those anymore.
Like somebody's actually going to be there to do that for you. But say you take it to a tire store or a shop, whatever. If you do it, drive it a couple miles, have them set it at the cold tire pressure. But if you've been driving it, you know, for an hour and decide to stop in and put air in it, it needs to be at least what that low tire setting is, probably add a few pounds to it, you know, 2 to 3 pounds to it from there. That way it's, when it cools down, it's going to drop down, you know, okay, to the proper pressure.
Well, you know, back in the day when tires were $30, $40, $50, that wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But now when they're $300 to $500 a tire, that's a big deal.
Right, right. I mean, you know? And there's so many different tires out there, you don't know that anyone's going to have your tire if you need one in a hurry either.
Oh, really?
You know, because, I mean, every car, every variation of that car may have a different size. And one car may have two different sizes on it. Or you may have a car that has directional tires that you may have four different tires on your car.
Say what?
Yeah, because
four different tires.
Well, if it's directional and different from front to rear and all that, it's you know, basically a size specific tread pattern, you may have to buy a right rear tire or a left rear tire, right front tire, left front tire. So. Yeah, you know, they'd be the same size, you know, front.
Right,
you know,
but they the have a directional same, marking
but
on
they're
the
directional
tire.
Directional marked, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and most of them you can run them, you know, on either side of the car, but there are some that you can't, you know. It's
well,
directional.
Well, it's like, you know, when you take your car to have the oil change and all on it, so many of the guys, you know, in a good shop will rotate your tires.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that, you know, if they say anything about rotating the tires, nah, not my car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But they know, and your guys are trained to know that those tires shouldn't be rotated.
Right, right. And we do all the time. It's we had a Corvette in there today. I saw one of the guys jacking it up, and like, you do realize those are different front to rear. I said, yeah, but they wanted them side to side, which those you could. They were not non-directional. So all you had to do was swap them side to side without a problem. But you know, you gotta.
In other words, you would put the right front on the left front,
right?
And the left front on the right front. Would you do the same thing with the rear tire?
Yeah, you do the same with the rear.
So there are some that are directional, and there's some that are non-directional.
Right, you just have to pay attention. Yeah.
Would this be in our book about the car?
Yeah, that owner's
that we none of us look
that,
at.
Yeah,
none of us look at.
That little storybook they throw in the glove box
for
no particular reason.
Well, it's got all the little pictures in it.
yeah. Those little things are in there. Yeah, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it.
If not, what would one of our listeners, what would they be looking for if they're looking to see if they have a directional tire?
Well, when you look at the tire on the sidewall, it'll actually have an arrow, and it'll say rotation, and it'll have an arrow going the way it should roll going forward.
Right. So if the arrow is if you're looking at the left front tire and the arrow is going forward,
right,
you're okay.
Yeah.
But if you look at the left front tire and the arrow is going backwards,
then
you have a wrong tire on the wrong side.
Yeah. We actually had a Corvette come in. Someone else had serviced. Don't know who it was. Yeah, you know. Brought in, and it had all kind of stability lights and traction control ABS lights and all this on, and they had put the rear tires on the left side and the front tires on the right side. So
what?
Don't know how they managed all that.
What?
But anyway, it was.
They're two different size tires.
Yeah, they were different size tires.
But anyway, must have been a shop with a blind mechanic.
Yeah, that's right. We're gonna take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Whoa, I'm looking at the world through a window. windshield, and I see everything in a little bit different light. I got a sweet little thing I'm a wanting to see in Nashville, and I'm down around Dallas.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Speaking of text, we got one from Dave from Gulf Shores. Sent me one here. I already told you about having to replace my 2017 Honda Fit with a 2020 Fit. There are differences, starting with the recommended engine oil. Instead of just a 0-20, now I can choose between a 0-20 and a 0-15. Is that the way it used to be? You know, 0-20 for the south of the Mason-Dixon and 0-15. Actually, it's 16. Maybe it's 16, but north of the line seasonal sounds old school, you know. And it's I'm not going to really call it seasonal down here. I don't think you really ever need to go to the lighter oil because we just don't get that cold here. You know, 0-20 is plenty thin enough to do everything that we need to do here. They're up north where it gets zero and below zero. You may want to go with a lighter weight oil, you know, because that initial startup is where you do most of the damage to your motor. And if it's too thick to get flowing, it's an issue, because these things, the clearances on these motors now is just crazy how tight they are. You know,
when you talked to me, told me here one night about, I'm not a engine builder per se, but I have helped build a lot of them, put them together.
Yeah.
On the shop, okay? But then we were talking about the clearances on like a piston to the cylinder walls. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, 1.5 to 2 thousandths, you know, was no big deal.
Right.
But
right.
Now you're talking about zero clearance and actually maybe having to put the piston in a refrigerator in the freezing mm-hmm. unit before you put it in the cylinder hole.
Huh? We have some that's as much as 0.75 of interference fit.
Interference. So yeah. That means the hole is smaller.
Yeah, the piston's bigger than the hole. I mean, it'll go in. Yeah.
Well, I personally don't understand that, because you've got a steel block, mm-hmm. and you've got an aluminum piston, and the aluminum piston from cold to engine temperature 180 degrees or 200 right. degrees is going to swell. Right. I mean, it's going to grow.
And they're coated pistons. They're real short, super short skirts. With that short skirt piston, to keep that piston running true up and down the cylinder, it has to be tied in there, you know.
Because if not, it would knock.
It's going to knock. It's going to use oil, you know, terribly bad. And it's going to work, you know, create wear.
My God. But, I'd hate to buy a set of those rings. Because those are not plain Jane steel rings.
Oh, no.
Knew them back in the day when you could buy a set of rings for $20, $30.
Right.
Well, then hot rod rings cost $180, so, you know. But. Yeah.
You know, and they're super thin rings. I was looking at a piston out of one of the little 1.5 turbo motors today, and it's the rings are probably – they're less than half as thick as what our standard old rings on our old – small
ball. Well, yeah, well, I mean, off the top of my head, I would say the ring grooves used to be 564, 564, 316ths.
Right, right.
You know?
And these are, they're less than an eighth, you know.
Holy cow.
Or less than a 16th, sorry. So it's, I don't remember the exact measurement, but they're thin rings. They're thinner than the thin rings that we run in our race motors.
Well, I can understand why some of our old school mechanics, not technicians or not mm-hmm. certified engine builders, but mechanics would have trouble building one of the newer engines today mm-hmm. versus what he did 30 years ago.
Right.
You know, and trying to use a set of mics to mic clearances and all of them and check mm-hmm. for the clearances.
Yeah, you know, it's if you're going to put one of these motors together, you better know how to read a mic. And
you better have a good mic.
Yeah. And have
you, have you better zero that thing two or three times while you're using it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I went to calibrator. School here. I went to school here a while back on engine mechanical, and I'm sitting there, and they're wanting you to measure the cylinder wall and the piston and calculate the clearance on the cylinder wall. You know, so I'm sitting there, and we got a dial bore gauge, so I'm setting up a dial bore gauge, and I find zero on the, on the cylinder. You know.
Well, you used a dial bore rather than a snap gauge?
Yeah, using dial bore gauge. Then I go and I'm
That's perfect, though. I mean, that's the best there is.
Yeah. You know, and I'm checking that against where I had mic'd the piston, to see it read.
And it's smaller.
The thing was, the instructor sitting there looking at me is like, that's not the way GM has in the book on how to do it. I said, I know, but this is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And he says, I know. You must have some machine background, there somewhere.
A lot of it. You build a lot of motors.
The machinists are about the only ones that I know that come in and do that. So it's, it's the exact way to do it. I mean, you're supposed to basically, if you're doing a rod journal and you want to check what the clearance is, you set your mic, you mic the rod journal, you set it up in a vise, you set your dial bore gauge to it, you use your dial bore gauge in the rod.
Dang right.
And what it reads is what it reads. That's your clearance.
Yeah, that's it.
There's no guessing. There's no math involved, nothing. Yeah.
Big John wore out two or three vices putting those rods in and out, when you're cutting the clearances back in them.
Yeah.
Then you got to take it off and get on the grinder and take a portion of a thousandth off, then bolt it back together, torque it back down, and put the snap gauges back in it and see what you got, and then see how much more you got to hone out of it.
Exactly.
And you might need to change another set of rocks. They had like four sets of rocks on those things, which would be the thickness of the cut or the strength. People have never been around where you built motors and went through all of that stuff.
Yeah.
They really have no idea why it costs as much as it does.
Right.
But everybody can't do it.
One of the guys just sent me a picture of the GM way to do it with
I wonder what that niggling was in there.
With the little special little dial bore tool.
What kind of contraption is that?
And it works, but there's too much error that can be made.
Oh yeah,
I don't care for that too much. It's just,
some engineer figured that out.
Works,
and he got paid good money to design that thing.
if you read and do and follow the directions 100%.
Yeah, but you can't beat what you were doing.
But, I'm in there in a class with 12 people, and we got 12 different numbers,
Yeah, but I'll bet my money on your dial bore gauge, though.
Mine was right. I knew it would be, He's like, how'd you come up with that number? And I showed him. He's like, oh, okay. It's kind of hard to argue with. Anyway, we got another text here. Hey, guys, I got a question about my 5.3 Vortec in a 2013 Silverado. I was told by a mechanic to delete the four-cylinder mode and, of course, stay on top of the oil changes. What's y'all's view on deleting the four-cylinder mode on these engines? Is it good or bad in the long run of the motor? Let's just say I'm.
Are you going to give us a personal opinion? Or are you going to give us a General Motors warranted opinion?
Forget that I work on General Motors vehicles under warranty. It's a good thing to delete the cylinder deactivation. I don't understand why they did it. I don't like the way it works. Don't care for it. The lifters locking and unlocking, all that stuff, it's a problem. And we don't have that much trouble with that part of that system, but I think it creates other issues.
But that's not warranty work.
But that's not something, that, and if you do that, you have modified that computer to
eliminate it. Well, okay, this is out of warranty.
It.
It's out of warranty anyway, so we can talk
about
it.
It's all good. Yeah. But if you do that, you have voided your warranty on your vehicle.
Right.
If it still happened to be under warranty. You know, I don't have a problem with it, you know, as far as deleting.
You don't sell your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's
at work.
Yeah.
It's okay here.
Yeah, it's okay here. Anyway, this is our show. But I think it's better on it. And the fuel mileage, from what I've seen, it doesn't change enough to count.
Okay, you know? That's cool.
The only time it really deactivates is if you are almost completely off the throttle, steady cruise, or deceleration, about the only time it's going to come in anyway. So I just don't think that's a you know, I just don't think that is the right way to go with
that's
it.
Cool.
I mean, I just
don't
think it helps enough. But, you know, every little bit they can get, I can understand. You know, they're trying to get the mileage mark they can to try and hit the CAFE rating that the government sets out there for them.
I think the executive order came out on that and deleted that. So it might be reinstituted here after February.
Unless y'all get out and vote.
But, yeah, if you don't get out and vote, it's going to be changed. And right. You know, after
a lot
February.
Of things changed, but. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but you need to get out and vote.
Yeah, I don't care who you vote for, but get out there and vote.
But anyway, it's very important election. So yes, get out there and vote. But let's see, the tire speed rating on my Honda is a 103T. Is it okay to get a set of tires that are rated at a 104 H or T? I would probably stick with, you know, the 104 T rating would probably be best to stay with instead of the H, but the 104 should not be a problem. So should be okay. I go with the 104 T if that's a more popular tire you can find. But sound like we run up to the end of our segment here. We're going to let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
With a kiss and I began to understand there's something women like about a pickup man. When I turned 16, I saved a few hundred bucks. My first car was a pickup truck. I was cruising the town.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you heard the story of the hot rod race that fatal day. Ford and, went out to play.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Ramkel, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. You know, we've had some really, this past weekend was beautiful weather for a car show, and just so happened we had a car show. I went to. Tommy English over at Automotive Painter Supply.
Great guy. He is awesome. He's one awesome gentleman.
Helps us out a little bit on a race car, and I certainly appreciate it. Has some beautiful cars of his own. Always puts on a good car show.
He's probably got 30 cars.
Yeah, probably so. And I got one of his out at my house right now, as a matter of fact. But they had, I don't know what the final count was, but about 8:30, I think he had about 275 cars over there.
That's a big show.
And they were steadily rolling in after that. But beautiful day for a car show. Absolutely, absolutely beautiful day for it. So
It was. It was really neat, man.
They had some really nice stuff. Saw a couple of the new 2020 Corvettes out there.
Already?
At least one of them. And it just kind of reminded me that we've actually delivered four now of the 2020 Vets. Very neat car. I mean, it really is. And it gets a bunch of attention when you get it out there in front of the people.
I can imagine. Now, do they have – how many different engine options do those things have?
Right now, you've got one.
Just one? Now, is this a mid-engine car?
Yeah, it's the mid-engine car, and it's got the 6.2 LS3, basically, motor in it. But they've got a twin double overhead cam turbo motor coming for it.
Ooh,
that's going to be their top-of-the-line flat plane crank, twin turboed.
Flat plane crank?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, does that go back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it works very well when you turn it up and you turn RPMs.
Yeah, but it's down in low RPMs, it sure does make a different sound.
It's a different sound. I mean, it's a totally different sound. Ford's been doing it with their GT motors for the last few years, and they're actually getting away from it now. But it's most all your really exotic motors, that's what they have in them.
No kidding.
You know, so it's a
so
different
they finally
sound.
Made it work. You know, we ran some circle track motors like that. Rusty Wallace had one in one of his cars when he was down here and ran down at Mobile International back in the – I guess that would have been in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
70 or 78, 79, maybe 80, somewhere in there. They had an all-pro race, and he was there.
Yeah.
And he had one of those cars, and that was the weirdest sounding motor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they had a big old, you know, cam in it that, you know, probably 600 lift or more.
Right.
And that thing hit hard, boy.
It hits hard, and you got to twist them to make them make
power.
Yeah,
got to turn the RPMs
and,
on.
You know, we're back then, cars were turning. If you had a really good one, you were turning 81, 8200.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they were probably turning it 9.
Easy. You know? Yeah.
So it's.
I wonder, that being said, I wonder how much easier is the flat plane crank versus the normal cranks that we run? I mean, would they be easier to balance, you think, or?
Well, and that's the one drawback, really, from the flat plane stuff is the vibration. They tend to vibrate more.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How about the harmonics in it?
And somehow they've figured out how to make them work. You know, it'll be a different sound, different feel for sure. But I know they've got the vibration out of it, and you know these newer cars, they've got. All of the motor mounts, everything in it are tuned. Some of them are electronically tuned.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, motor mounts. They've got wires hooked to them.
Wait a minute. How are you going to tune it? You going to change spark plugs or are you going to change your fuel? How do you tune?
Well, it's kind of like the way they do with a shock. You know, it may be a magnetic fluid in the mount. You know, they use hydraulic mounts now, which is basically a shock built into a rubber.
Here we go again, try to take out the harmonics or the balance or the vibration.
Just isolate it from the car, you know. They don't have to stop all the vibration. They just have to stop you from feeling it.
Right, they're not stopping it. They're just stopping you from feeling it.
Right. So, you know, it's, the technology is getting way more advanced than you'd ever would have thought it would be, you know. But know, and... Not hyping anything for GMC because I work at a Chevrolet store, but I hear the new Hummer is coming out here shortly, which is an all-electric truck. I think they're supposed to announce it. Maybe even tomorrow. I think is when it's supposed to be announced, but or shown to the
all
public.
All-electric.
They're bringing the Hummer back, and it's going to be an all-electric. You know, so. Yeah, our electric technology is coming way further than what it has been. You know, the batteries are just so much better than what they used to be.
And
we were talking about one today that little Nissan all electric, and it had a drive range of like 75 miles.
What?
And that was it. Yeah, it's fine if you work. You know, downtown, and you live downtown, and you just kind of commute right around that little area. But you know, if you live in,
that wouldn't work for me.
Mississippi, and
it wouldn't work for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people drive more than that. 70 to 100 miles a day. Just turn around.
Well, I mean, I live 10 miles from work. Doesn't sound like very very far, but
yeah, but you wouldn't make three or four trips.
Say if I drive to work. And say I go to lunch and it's close to 10 miles away and come back, then I head home, you know.
You better get a longer extension cord.
You're 40 to 50 miles. If I go anywhere else, you're right at the end of your rope.
Can you charge it up at the shop when you get back?
Yeah. Well, you may get enough in there to help it, you know. But
well, you know,
the chargers were slow.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't
fast
charging.
It would be like you'd have your own slot. Check this out.
Right.
You'd have your own slot at work or at home, and you'd back the car in it. It'd be like, you know, the male, the car would have the female plugs on it, and the wall would have the male plugs, and you just back in there and it
plug boop, it in.
It automatically plugs itself in, you know. And so when it when the battery gets charged, it goes beep beep beep.
Yeah.
So you can quit drinking coffee.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
leave.
Yeah.
That ain't 75 miles ain't gonna get it.
No, no, not. But
that would well it might work on a bicycle.
Not on your average commuter, you know.
Or scooter. That would work on some of them scooters they're leasing out down there now, renting down there.
Right, right. Well, you're not going but around the block usually, you know. But, yeah. If you're going any distance, that's not going to really
work. That wouldn't even work on a motorcycle.
Yeah. But, you know, it's now they've got them up to where they're, you know, 300-400 miles.
Right. 300-400 miles, 500 miles. They're talking about going to 500 miles.
Yeah.
And better, and that's where it's going to go. And that's when we're going to see this. That's all we're going to see on the highway.
Yep. And, you know, and charging stations are coming, you know, where they're going to have charging stations at either rest areas or someplace where you can stop, you know, top off or at least boost it enough to where you can make it on where you're going. You know, if you can go 2 to 3 hours, you know, and stop for 30 minutes or 45 minutes and get a boost and go another 2 or 3 hours, I could deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're going to see more of those highways like we've talked about before up around East Point, Georgia and up in there.
Yeah.
Where they've got, actually you drive a electric car, on that highway, in that lane, it charges the battery back up for you.
Right, and this is all technology that's coming. I mean, it's already there. They just got to get it implemented.
They probably, as you said, it's already there. They probably already have it. They just haven't let us know about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's just like the hydrogen vehicles. You know, you get so much pushback from some of the oil industries and that where, you know, they're not going to, you know, support it because you're not buying their oil from them.
Oil, man. Yeah.
And, you know, all these, you know, charging roads where, you know, you do all that. One thing you got to think about is all these electric cars, most of them aren't paying road taxes, you know, because they're not buying fuel, which is how you pay the road tax.
You know, you're talking about that. You know, we were talking about elections a while ago. Mm-hmm. If they cut out fracking and that phase of the oil industry, you better look out because our oil prices are going to go out unbelievable.
Yeah.
And the gasoline is too because gasoline is made from oil.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And people don't realize that. They just think, well, oil goes in your car. But now, we make our gasoline, we make our diesel fuel, we make our kerosene, we make all of our heating oils and everything,
plastics.
Yeah, and also, all the plastics come from oil, and all you know. We cut out fracking. We cut out any other sources of oil. So we're in trouble, guys.
It has been nice to be, you know, energy independent.
We're headed to the point where we will be less dependent on oil, but we're not ready right now for that.
Right, right. So, you know, we're actually oil or energy independent from any other countries right now, which is somewhere we have not been in quite a few years.
I don't want us to be buying the more damn oil from Russia or from Iran, you know, either one.
When those countries can hold that over your head, there's an issue.
Don't you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. Push come to shove, you know, we're good. We got everything we need.
Right.
You know, we don't need anything from anybody if we don't have to. So. But anyway,
might change after the election.
Yeah, yeah. So
I ordered extra ammunition anyway. So
that goes back to go vote.
I got to go vote, and I've got a couple of new guns. I've got all my ammunition all down and got it fixed up. You know,
got everything ready to go.
Anybody gonna take anything I got?
Right, right.
I worked for it.
Yep, absolutely. Fought for it.
Yep.
Fought for it. But how much time we got? I knew we were running right at it. Sounds like it's
right
time
there.
For end of our segment here. We'll be back after these messages and see what we can do to help you out. Never meaning no harm.
beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, yeah. Flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle, Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or send us a text to that same number, 343-0106. But
You told me something a while ago that I want you to elaborate on a little bit more.
Okay.
When we were talking about the oil, mm-hmm. and we were talking about 0-20 and 0-15 and et cetera, or 5W-20 and 5W-15.
Right.
As a dealership selling these newer cars, mm-hmm. knowing that we have all this new technology with our motors and all in it, what is the most popular oil that you find that you guys are using at your facility in all of these newer vehicles? Because 90% of the 95%, I guess, of the vehicles mm-hmm. you work on are the newer models, yeah. 2 or 3 years old.
Right. Well, you know, and you know, here a couple of years ago, we ended up switching around from non-synthetic to the full synthetic. Well, we initially switched over to a semi-synthetic.
Well, that's what General Motors came out with.
Yeah, synthetic blends. And that was their Dexos oil. Well, they've changed that to went to a full synthetic. And then they went from the, which was the 530, and then now we have gone to a 0-20 full synthetic. And it's a, you know, that is our most common oil that we're using
0-20.
Now. 0-20, lightweight stuff, mm. yeah. And it works, you know.
The tolerances, we keep talking about the tolerances of the motor, and which means the clearances and the moving parts,
right?
On these motors, that's a tolerance, whether it be a half a thousandths or a tenth of a thousandth, et cetera. But now that we have the closer clearances, we don't need that thick oil,
right? Well, we're not trying to take up clearance in the motor with oil,
right?
You know. Where before you had to have a lot of that, the oil film there as a cushion.
Right, right.
They're not necessarily using that anymore. They're mm-hmm. just lubricating it. But it's, the bearings are way tougher than what they used to be. I mean, I haven't seen a bearing failure. True bearing failure.
That was going to be one of my next question is, how much do you think they've changed the type of materials that we see as far as rod bearings, main bearings, and even lifters or the lobes on the cams and things that are susceptible to wear.
Right. Well, you know, everything has gone away from the non-roller, you know, friction-type components in a motor where we used to have a flat tappet camshaft and a rocker arm that was on a hard pivot. You know, or a ball that was a hard pivot, and the, you know, all that has gone to a roller type, you know, fulcrum or a roller lifter. So all that friction has gone away, which keeps oil temperatures down. You don't have near the wear in the motor that you used to get. All of our bearing materials, you know, way back when, you know, early on in motors, they had a poured Babbitt, you know, rod crankshaft and all that. Well,
you know, back in the A model days and all those early model vehicles, we had the Babbitt rods,
yeah.
you know, and even some Babbitt cranks. And then you added, it's like lead, you add it, Right. And then you cut it back to the, you know, to the whatever size you need.
Yeah, and you actually put it in there almost with an interference fit, and it kind of wore itself in. And
oh, yeah.
But it continued to wear.
Right,
and
right.
You actually built them with shims that you could pull out as you mm-hmm. run the motor to tighten it back up a little bit, you know. And
well, some of these shade trees used used newspaper folded up.
Oh, yeah.
And our shoelaces, not shoelaces, but the
leather, shoe leather.
Yeah, the shoe leather and stuff out of the tongues, out of shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Went,
yeah.
I seen a motor come down one time and it had a rod bearing. Didn't have a rod bearing in it. It had a tongue out of a shoe in
hey,
but
Mark,
it come from one of those fine used car lots, baby.
Right,
yeah,
right.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, but we've gone away from that, and then we went to a bearing that had a Babbitt surface on it, but it was a pre-made bearing that you put in.
And then, well, we got back to the old Clevite bearings that a lot of our guys of my age know what they are, and the tri-ply bearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you couldn't beat those, man.
And they were tough bearings, you know, but now we've gone to more of a hard surface polished bearing. But we just don't get anything. But the clearance is very small.
All that being said, what you're running that much clearance or that less clearance, mm-hmm. and you're not putting as much oil in there, so it doesn't have a tendency to cool it as quick, does it? I mean, are we running? We seeing temperatures come from that, or is our cooling system strong enough to take out the heat as more so than what it used to?
Our cooling systems are way better than what they used to be. Now, we run the motors hotter than what we did at one point. It's not unusual to run a motor 220 degrees at all times.
Well, you know, and back in the day, that you couldn't keep water in it there because water boils at 212.
Right, you know. And, yeah, but our systems are a higher pressure system. Yeah, they hold pressure a little bit higher than normal than what they used to. And, you know, 220 degrees is no big deal for them. That's
all right.
What they like to run.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it has to do with the type of gas that we have. I call it watered down kerosene.
Well, you know, we went through a period there probably 15 years ago or 20 years and back that the fuel was junk. I mean, if you had that kind of temperature in a motor, it started igniting before it ever got to the cylinder.
Oh, yeah. Pre-ignition.
Pre-ignition. You had to back the timing so far down. And
then it wouldn't run.
Compression had to be so low and all this to even get it to where you could.
Well, they didn't have any power then.
Yeah.
You know, you
were killing power.
We had no power.
Now, I mean, we got motors out there that's almost 12 to 1 running on regular pump gas.
You know, and that's unbelievable because back in the day, man, we couldn't run a car over 10 and a half.
You were pushing your luck at 10.
Yeah, I know. You know, if you got it at 11 to 1, you couldn't. You had to go to the airport and get airplane gas and put in it.
Right. Yeah. But, with electronics and everything we have now, the design of the piston is a huge part of that. Because, very rarely do you see just a flat piston anymore. There's always some kind of shape to the top dome of the piston that.
And valve reliefs.
And the valve reliefs and all in it, and as well as the combustion chamber and the surfacing of of those things. Much more polished surface.
Oh, yeah. It's like the old Hemi heads, and they run so close, that piston runs so close to that spark plug that it's actually got an indentation in the piston for the spark plug.
Right.
If you put the wrong plugs in there, it'll beat the ends off the plugs. Well, somebody said, I'm going to put a hotter plug in my car. You better not, baby.
Yeah. Well, I can remember our four-cylinder days. You know, we would have to index the plugs in the cylinder.
Oh, heck yeah.
Or it would close the gap up
it
on
would
the plug
close them.
Because it was
too
close.
Well, you know, we did run a little close tolerance there.
It was, there was the piston was sticking out a little ways. And the,
No.
And
no,
it
wouldn't do that.
Combustion chamber, the cylinder head had been cut down quite a bit.
No, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, if you're trying to get 14 and a half to one out of a, flat top piston, you had to play
the game
a little bit.
You mean you
wanted
to turn it 10,000 RPMs?
Oh, yeah.
With a timing belt?
Yep. Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
We always said, when we started building those things back in the day, said, that thing won't run over 4,000 RPM. That's got a dang bad timing belt on it.
Yeah.
Shoot.
We never had a problem with the belt. Yeah, the belt
we had to buy good belts, and we had to buy good tensioner,
right,
with a big heavy duty spring in that sucker to keep them on there till 9,000. You better not miss a gear though.
Yeah, we did have some issues with the clutch we were running in that thing, old Ram clutch, and it would disengage occasionally once it got some wear on it, and you would see 13,000-14,000 RPMs, and it lived that night, but the next night it'd blow up. We learned that after a couple tries and decided it was time to freshen it up.
You know what? We had a good time doing that, and we gained a lot of experience by doing that, and we spent a lot of money by doing that.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You know what? We didn't get outrun many times.
No.
Very few times. How many times did we win the Snowball Derby? Four?
Well, we run it four times. We won it twice, finished second once, and then we had some mechanical issues, so we finished it like 15th.
Okay.
One
I'll take that.
But I'll live with that when we're talking – 50 cars show up for each one of those. Can't really complain about that. But that's to me racing nowadays. They've taken a lot of fun out
because
you don't get to build that better mousetrap anymore. Yeah. But
back in the day, we don't turn us loose, man. Let us build some stuff because we are gonna go fast.
Exactly.
Sometimes we don't last, but we're gonna go fast.
Yep, until we figure it out, then it'll live.
Right, then we figure it out, though. Blow it up a couple of times. You figure out what happened.
Oh, yeah, find out what breaks.
There you go.
Sounds like it's the end of our show tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show, and we will be back next week.
And don't forget, guys, Ed Seafood Shed has a discount for veterans and first responders, so be sure to participate and let them know that you are a first responder and are a veteran. And to all of you guys, hoorah.